Okay, welcome everybody, and especially welcome to people who've joined us for the first time, including Ratnadeva, who's the final person on our team. And yeah, apologies for being a little bit late starting this session. That's me, all down to me. But lovely to be here with you, and I do think, well, my sense was that we, those of us who were here already felt like we were going quite deep. And I'm always surprised how that can happen when we're all in our separate places, but we sort of share this virtual space and do practice together, but we're also, well, I suppose that's the same all the time, is that we're doing our practice individually as well as alongside others. And we can think of that also worldwide, that there are other people practicing living their lives, and we're connected and interconnected, and we're not always aware of that. But it is one of the things that can be quite helpful to reflect on from time to time, that we're not alone, we're not isolated in our practice and in being living beings sharing the world. So yesterday, Maitri Pushpa was doing a lot of reflecting and also giving us different ways of reflecting, including reflecting through the body, which I think was a really helpful thing to be reminded of. And yeah, she shared a lot of, you know, some of the things that she'd been dealing with during the year and sort of some reflections that had come out of that. And also just that whole thing of the cycle of nature, cycle of life, cycle of our lives. That this is a season, you know, if we're in Western Hemisphere, I guess, where we're approaching winter and things are getting darker and there's less things growing, and it can be that sort of sense of going inward and that idea of hibernating. And I knew that bears did hibernate over winter and when it's cold, and that is quite an amazing thing that they do. I totally didn't know that bears give birth while they're hibernating. I think that's quite extraordinary. And it's such a metaphor, isn't it? If we do go inward, if we do sort of withdraw, even if we're not consciously thinking or studying or anything like that, a lot of stuff can emerge, a lot of new things can be given birth to. And maybe, you know, in our own way, on this retreat, we may find things are emerging, there's new ideas or new awarenesses or new intentions that could emerge. And yeah, going inwards does give us that opportunity to reflect and maybe creating a little bit more space and not being quite so busy. That was a theme that came up, wasn't it, about being very active, very busy and not having that space. But if we do create it, then things can emerge and we can get deeper understandings, deeper awarenesses of the patterns and habits of our lives, the conditioning from way back that is still affecting us. And from that awareness, you know, we get choices. So, yeah, for me, this last year has been one where that's been happening a lot, actually. There's a whole lot of things that I thought I dealt with, things that I'm aware of were with patterns, but I just saw how I'm continuing to play them out, consciously, unconsciously, and actually seeing a bigger pattern of where all that was coming from, and what was triggering it in them more recently. But I wasn't giving myself that time to reflect on it. I sort of something would happen, I'd be aware, oh yeah, or something else would happen, oh yeah, oh yeah, I recognise this, or I'm acting out, or I'm not doing this. And then when I gave myself a bit more time, I got a whole lot more perspective on it, and I do think that that will be one of the things that's going to be helping me next year, sort of acting on that. And I think there are those things that we find difficult to be with, or acknowledge, or own sometimes. And there's also that thing about, well, some things are a little bit difficult to face, you know. You don't want to face things about yourself, you might not want to face things about your conditions or about the world. But I think there is that thing of turning towards and seeing what is, that is so important, and that's where reflecting can be really helpful, to just see what's going on right now. See what was going on, you know, a week ago, a month ago, what's been going on during the year, maybe through our lives, and using that mirror-like wisdom, so not blaming ourselves for it, not getting into a whole load of stories or catastrophizing, but just, okay, this is how things are, and this is where I am right now. I think that was one of the things Maitri Pushpa was talking about, and then, well, if this is the case, then what can I do? And it links for me with conditionality, that if we see where we are, then maybe we can change some of those conditions, not all of them, but some of them. There's a quote from James Baldwin that seems to me very dharmic, which is, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. So not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. Yeah. So if we aren't willing to, I suppose, bring awareness to our experience, then we just are going to keep on repeating and repeating habits and patterns, some of which may not be helpful anymore. They might have served us really well in the past, but they might not be well. And maybe alongside that, we might not give ourselves that opportunity to allow new things to emerge. You know, the things that might be more meaningful that we haven't given the space, all those things that we might have thought in the past we'd like to explore or develop, and we've never given ourselves that time, that opportunity. And maybe some of that is coming out of our anxiety and fear of changing things, or maybe a sense of not having a sense of agency in the world. For me, for many years, I didn't have that sense of agency, and it actually was my first encounter with the Dharma, with the opening verses of the Dharmapada, that gave me that sense of agency. So I'm going to quote it again, and I'm going to quote it in the Penguin edition, because that's the one that I heard. And the opening verses go like this. What we are today comes from our thoughts of yesterday, and our present thoughts build our life of tomorrow. Our life is the creation of our mind. If one speaks or acts with an impure mind, suffering follows as the wheel of the cart follows the beast that draws the cart. What we are today comes from our thoughts of yesterday, and our present thoughts build our life of tomorrow. Our life is the creation of our mind. If one acts or speaks with a pure mind, joy follows as one's own shadow. So that was the whole sense of ethical dimension, you know, that what we do, the choices we make, the actions we make, whether it's body, speech or mind, will have an effect, you know, on us and on others. And then I think the next few verses, to me, are so relevant now, and they were very relevant on a more personal level to me at that point, because I was very much in a sort of victim mode and feeling angry and resentment and hatred to certain people. But I think it sort of very much speaks to the world and what's happening right now in the world as well. He insulted me, he hurt me, he defeated me, he robbed me. Those who think such thoughts will not be free from hate. He insulted me, he hurt me, he defeated me, he robbed me. Those who think not such thoughts will be free from hate. For hate is not conquered by hate. Hate is conquered by love. This is a law eternal. Many do not know that we are here in this world to live in harmony. Those who know this do not fight against each other. So very challenging, but in a way for me the whole of the Dharma, the whole of practice is encapsulated in those opening verses. And it's a challenge to try and live by them, but they're also what makes for me it worth living, you know, trying to live by those values. And I know that we don't necessarily have much choice over what's happening around the world, but what we do have choice is in how we particularly respond to the conditions we find, the experiences we have. And we can either add to the hatred to the world, or we can work with that, trying to free ourselves from hate, trying to come more from a place of kindness and compassion. And that will have an effect, you know, even if it's just on the people that we encounter in the world, you don't know how much effect that might have. So I'm getting a bit more serious than I thought I would today, but I think looking on actions and consequences, I can see, you know, ways that I've behaved that have not been helpful, that have not been skillful. You know, and I've seen that that doesn't have a good impact on myself or on others or on the world. And I can also see that there are some things that I've done that maybe have been coming more from my, you know, better qualities and being more skillful, you know, more ethical. And I can also see that that has had a more positive effect on myself and on others. But it can happen in really little ways as well, you know. If I'm looking back over the last year, you know, one of the things I was aware of was having been quite harsh with somebody and quite reactive. And I had all this guilt and all this shame, but I didn't feel able to, well, be in contact with them because of that. It was just like, I felt really bad and I thought, you know, they would hate me forever with good reason, you know. And I kind of felt kind of paralyzed by that guilt and by that shame. And then when I was actually allowed myself to turn towards it and face it and sort of, you know, actually take responsibility for it. In Buddhism, we do have a practice of confession where we do, you know, maybe admit to ourselves or to Buddha or to other friends what we've done. You know, we take responsibility for the action. You know, we look at the consequences. Is there any kind of repair or amends that we can make? You know, and if we can, we try and do that. But then we try and let go of it, you know. Whereas, you know, my old patterns were just basically, this is going to be a really difficult situation and they already will have hated me and not want anything more to do with me, so why would I even try, you know. But actually, you know, I did, you know, and I... You know, it took me a little time to get down to doing it, but then I did actually write and, you know, say I was sorry, you know, and acknowledge, you know, what I felt I'd done and my regret for that and, you know, any consequences that might have had on them. And then what I also did, because this is a practice we have in Buddhism, which I think is really helpful, is I rejoiced in their merits and I just sort of, you know, said some of the things that I really appreciated and valued about them. you know. And I thought, well, I'm just going to write it. You know, probably they don't want to have anything to do with me, you know, but I'll just write it because I think this is true, and I just wanted to, you know, I suppose make a little bit of amends, if I could, by acknowledging that I behaved in a way I regretted, and that I did actually see these qualities in them. Yeah, and it's actually been a very positive experience, you know. It took a little, you know, a couple of weeks later I got a reply back from them, and then we talked, and then we've actually, I think, developed a really good friendship out of that, with a lot of depth, a lot of sharing, a lot of being honest about, you know, past conditioning and things like that, which I would never have dreamt would have happened from that particular situation, you know, particularly in terms of like some of my experience of when I'd had difficult communications with people, or when I'd not done what they wanted me to do, or, you know, my intrinsic feeling that I had for many, many years of being bad, you know. I no longer believe that, but sometimes when things are difficult, I kind of emotionally believe it, you know. So some of it is actually being able to notice when that's happening for me and turn towards it and see through it. And also maybe have a bit more of that mirror-like wisdom of, yeah, yes, I did this. Yes, it was unskillful. Yes, it probably had these consequences, and I'm, you know. But that's still not adding all the extra stuff on it, not adding all the guilt and the shame and the blame and the fear and all those sorts of things, but just this is here, you know, and turning towards it, you know, facing it, you know, that James Baldwin quote, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. And that was a example where actually facing it, it was possible to create some positive change, you know, and also recognize that pattern in me, recognize the conditions that had led to me acting in that way, and you know, being a bit more alert about that, a little bit more sensitive towards that, and having that intention, trying not to do that again. You know, obviously sometimes we repeat and repeat things because that's part of our conditioning, but the more we become aware of it, the more choices we have. And this is a practice, everything is a practice, you know, our actions, our ethical actions. There's a reason we talk about that in terms of practice, just as we talk about meditation in practice, because you know, we'd have to keep on doing it again and again and again and again before we can actually maybe change things significantly. But if we do it in little steps, it will still have an effect, and those baby steps that we can have, being a little bit more kind, a little bit more kind, a little bit more compassionate, a little bit more aware, over time they can make a really big difference, you know, in ourselves and also in how we are with others. Because our practice isn't just around, you know, ourselves. Well, it may feel like that at the beginning. We may think that we're just trying to do a bit of healing, we're trying to find a way of coping better with what life throws at us and the conditions that we're dealing with, internal or external. But there's also, alongside that, that illusion, I suppose, that we are separate from other beings, other people, and the world. And when we actually allow ourselves to uncover that, to see that, to align ourselves with that reality a bit more, then it becomes very clear that, you know, what we do is not in isolation. You know, if we work on ourselves and become more kind, more generous, more aware, then that will have an impact on the people around us and the people that we interact with, you know, that we will be sending something more positive out into the world. And I think what is interesting, we're talking about mirror-like wisdom, we're talking about Akshobhya, and I always find it interesting that he's somebody that's supposed to help us work with ill will, aversion and hatred, and transform it into metta and kindness and compassion through that mirror-like wisdom. And certainly I found trying to have a bit more of that perspective, trying to just sort of be with what is, see what is, can really help me Not necessarily immediately let go of things, but over time. I'm just admiring Vajra. So Vajra is a diamond thunderbolt, which is very much associated with wisdom and seeing things and having insight. And it's quite interesting, actually, because yes, Akshobhya has a Vajra, and he has it in the palm of his hand, perfectly balanced, upright. He doesn't use it as a weapon. Sometimes you see some of these wrathful figures wielding a Vajra and this diamond thunderbolt that can cut through anything, apparently, and is also indestructible. So sometimes our insights can be a little bit like that. They just cut through everything. But also, Akshobhya is associated with dawn. And if you've ever been outside during dawn and it's completely dark and at a certain point it's day, but you can't completely pin it down. It's very subtle and very gradual, that change of darkness into light that happens around dawn and the beginning of the day. So that's another way that we can experience our awareness, our insight developing is in a much more subtle way. Sorry. Yeah. And I think, again, it's not something to force. Yeah, sometimes we feel that we need to force something to happen or force change, force ourselves to change. Be very focused on our development, our transformation. And I think there is something about having intentions, there's something about having discipline, there's something about continuity, certainly in terms of meditation, although I think there's something about just being really open and receptive and allowing stuff to develop. I also think there's a place for discipline, a place for actually making an effort, and a place for, don't know quite how to say it. But well, if you, it's very possible to come along and do a little bit of meditation. Maybe you've got an app. You do 10-minute meditation. Well, we know from the neuroscientists that even 10 minutes a day actually does have quite a significant effect, and can actually even change the function and the structure of our brain if we keep on doing it. And if you actually keep on meditating and go on retreats and go on courses and do longer meditations and make it much more part of your life, it will have more effect. Yeah. Certainly for me, settling down into meditation at the beginning, it can take me sometimes if there's a lot going on or a lot going on internally, can take me 40 minutes to settle and get to the place where I can, go more deeper in my meditation. So if I'm only doing 10 minutes, I'll never actually get to that place, and I'll just think, oh, I'm not very good at meditating or whatever. So I'm going a little off topic, but there's something about creating the conditions for change, which begins, I think, with awareness, which takes a lot of courage actually, to actually allow yourself to see what's there, to be with what's there. And I think that's another reason why it's really important to be developing metta alongside. We need kindness, we need compassion to be able to sit with what is difficult and to allow ourselves to be how we are, to allow other people to be how they are. Give space for things to come into being, for those new bulbs to start growing. Yeah, you can't force a seed or a bulb to grow. They've got that within them, they've got that nature within them, and you create the right conditions, and then they will. But if they haven't got the right conditions, particularly seeds can remain dormant for years and years and years. And it's like that with us. We have all these qualities, all this potential, and if we create the right conditions, they can grow and bloom and flourish, or we can grow and bloom and flourish. And I would say some of that condition is recognizing ourselves as being connected, interconnected with others, with nature, finding our own cycle in our lives, aligning ourselves with the cycle of nature and other lives, you know, that's part of our practice. So reflection, I think, is really important. It's very easy to just keep on being busy and not reflecting. But when we do that reflecting, when we do create a bit of spaciousness in our lives, in our hearts, in our minds, that's when we begin to create conditions where something else can emerge. And can we trust that emergence? Can we be open and receptive to that? So, in a way, this is a day where I'm going to invite you to just be open, be receptive to whatever is there for you right now, whatever might be emerging right now, or whatever themes or awarenesses or things might have been emerging over this year. Yeah. And sometimes we just need to allow something time. You know, we might see the shoots of something and think, oh yeah, da 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 da, I should do this, I should do that. But that can kill it, you know. Giving something space, potential space, you know, over time gives it that, I suppose, the conditions where it can sort of grow into what it might be, rather than what we think it should be or what, you know, other people might think it should be. You know, and sometimes it's quite important to keep it quite private while it's a little shoot, because you can sort of be feeling something and you share it with somebody and then they might completely say something that squashes it or, you know, kills it for you, or that makes you think of it in a different way rather than just allow yourself to have your own particular relationship with it and see what develops. So with mindfulness, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we talk a lot about being in the present moment. But it is something that, you know, awareness, insight is something that is informed by what's happened in the past and that will also have an effect over the future, you know. I mean, if we don't have that capacity to be present and to be with what is, then that makes it very hard to, in a way, process, integrate, you know, make positive use of what's happened in the past, and also, you know, maybe to have that sense of intentionality from that can guide some of what we do in the future. So I think, yes, we need to be present, but we also need to have that sense of it's not just being in the moment, because if we were only in the moment, then we wouldn't necessarily, our actions wouldn't necessarily be having consequences, or we wouldn't be able to make those choices to make those consequences, you know, that our lives are the creations of our minds, you know, build our life partly out of what we've experienced, what we've noticed, and what we've reflected on, and the insights we've had. One of the things, again, from yesterday, Maitripushpa saying was that connection that sometimes there can be things that are difficult and challenging, that can be dukkha, but out of that, sometimes some positive stuff can emerge and arise, you know. Just as, when things are, yeah, positive, if we are able to actually also include the darker side, or the more challenging side, that can also be a very fruitful place. Yeah. Okay, and I'm doing a quote again. I think Martin Luther King. But I know somehow that only when it is dark enough can you see the stars. So sometimes we do need to be willing to be with the dark in order to be able to see what is possible, see those stars. And that means sort of acknowledging the reality of things like dukkha, you know, suffering and unsatisfactoriness in the world and in our own personal experience, in our own lives, yeah. Now sometimes we can get very identified with our own experience, and not be more open to other people, that whole thing of getting caught up in me and mine and forgetting that there's others there. And we can take ourselves and our experience very, very seriously. But I think we do need to take it seriously, actually. It's just not seriously at the expense of also taking other people's experience seriously. But one of the things that I notice, or have noticed as a pattern in my life, and something that I try not to do, but every now and again I just notice, oh, I'm doing it again, is taking dukkha personally. You know, from a Buddhist perspective, there is dukkha. It's one of the lakshanas, the three lakshanas, one of the marks of existence, that there's dukkha, there's impermanence, there's what we call insubstantiality, everything's in process, nothing is fixed. You know, and they all kind of relate together, that sort of sense of, you know, I'm like this, you're like that, the world is like that, and then that can lead to a sense of, you know, feeling impotent, that there's no change possible. So actually that that idea of impermanence that is so central to Buddhism is what makes change possible. It's what makes growth possible. It's what makes transformation possible. And it's happening anyway, whether or not we want it to be happening or not. It's there all the time, just like dukkha's there. But actually, if things are impermanent, then the things that are causing us suffering, the things that we don't like, those are also impermanent. Sometimes people think of impermanence much more in terms of loss, but can also be in terms of new things emerging, like those bulbs, like the bears giving birth while they're hibernating. Yeah, that's the, you know, with impermanence, yeah, I'm remembering now what Maitri Pushpa said. She said something about something positive can hold loss, but also loss can also hold happiness and joy, or at least the seeds of it, you know. And it's also just part of aligning ourselves with the reality and the way things are. You know, if I look back, you know, one of the most painful things in my life was when my mother died. You know, we were very close, and you know, she was so central in my life. In some ways, she was almost like my best friend. And in some ways, it was incredibly traumatic. But another way, it, you know, another time, it was a time where, in the run-up to her death, we had some very, very deep, very, very important connections and conversations. You know, and actually being there at the time of her death, it was quite, I'd never actually been there at a death, and there was something very peaceful in the room the couple of days before she died, and I really got a different sense of, you know, life and death from being in that experience. You know, it was very clear that when she died, you know, she wasn't her body, for instance. And there was an energy in the room, and there was a whole lot of other stuff that I couldn't understand. I had no frame for it. And it made me really question also what was important to me, you know, and think, well, if I, and also recognize my own impermanence. And if I'm going to die, then I might as well die having done some of the things that are meaningful for to me, and at least having tried, even if things haven't actually always worked out how I wanted them to. rather than having been too afraid to try to do the things that I wanted to do, or worried about how other people might react to it, you know. I thought, well, you know, I'm in permanent, I'm only here for a short amount of time, I might as well do some of the things that are important to me. And, you know, out of that eventually came me becoming a Buddhist, but also choices I made in my life about the things that I wanted to pursue and do. I've always gone for things that I found have meaning to me and that hopefully might offer something to other people. You know, I've had a lot of different professions in the time, from being a classical musician to being a massage therapist, teacher and healer, to being a counsellor, to working in schools as a primary school teacher, or being a nursery manager, and now working at a Buddhist centre. But for me, there's always been that sense of it needs to be something that matters to me, that is meaningful to me, and that sense that, you know, hopefully there's something that other people might be able to benefit from as well. Whereas before that, I would probably not have done any of that. You know, so there was something about having that dharmic perspective, which includes the fact of impermanence, and also includes the fact that whatever I'm doing, I might encounter a lot of dukkha along the way, because dukkha just is, you know, there is suffering in the world, and things don't always go the way we want. And in fact, from that sort of more classic perspective of Buddhism, you know, there's things that we want that we don't get, and that causes us dukkha. There's things that happen that we get that we don't want, and that causes us dukkha. And, you know, even when things are going the way we want, and we're getting life as well, we've got all the things that we're dreaming about, we know that they're not permanent, because there is impermanence and change, so we can be worried about losing them or what will happen, you know, and cause ourselves a whole lot of unnecessary suffering rather than just enjoying them while we have them, you know. So there's something about having that perspective of impermanence can make us really value things and the transience of things and what's here now. You know, I've got this friendship now, I've got this, you know, particular set of conditions that are actually really, I'm really enjoying, so let's just enjoy them, even if they will change, even if they will, you know, won't be here forever. So that aligning ourselves with the way things are, which includes impermanence and dukkha and process and change, means that we can stop putting so much energy into resisting, yeah. So I think, you know, resisting things being the way that we don't want them to be, or resisting certain aspects of our experience, even if it's like, I don't want to be feeling sad, or I don't want to be feeling angry, and so I'm just going to sort of cut that off or whatever. Or maybe I'm a bit scared about feeling happy and joyful and creative, and I'm not going to allow myself to feel those. We all have our own particular ways of being, and the things that we find it harder to be with. So yeah, I suppose my invitation is to just allow whatever is there to be there, to see what emerges, you know, within yourself. You know, maybe what's happening in your body, maybe what's happening in your energy, your heart, your thoughts. And just give it space, yeah? You don't have to understand it or think it or think, oh, you know, this is happening because of blah, 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 blah. You know, sometimes it's helpful to understand, you know, how things have come, but sometimes we don't need to understand it, we just can be with it and allow it to emerge and become what it's going to become. I think in the creative process there's often a whole period of not knowing what something is, and it's sort of taking form, and before it even manifests at all in the world, there's a whole lot of that going on. And then as it is beginning to manifest, or you are beginning to manifest it again, you just need to give it space and experiment and explore. And I think that's the same with our lives. That's the same with our practice. That's the same with our relationships as well, you know, allow things to emerge. And if we can bring a bit of dharmic perspective to it at some point, if we can, you know, make choices, make ethical choices, or try and work out what will be most helpful for us and for others, but also just create that potential space and allow it to, allow things to emerge from that. So, yeah, seeing what emerges as you reflect on the year that's happened, perhaps. Seeing what emerges as you become aware of where you are right now. And just like moment to moment on the retreat, you know, if we're doing a meditation, if we're doing a period of reflection, if we're doing a mantra or a ritual, bit of movement. Again, just being open, just being receptive. So I'm going to stop there. And, that was a bit longer than I thought. Okay. So, let's just have a little period of silent reflection. Maybe noticing anything that's emerging for you. And we'll do that for about 15 minutes and then we'll have a little bit of a break. So, just wondering what it's like to be quiet, but not specifically meditating, just to be open to what's emerging. Because I think we often are so busy, so active, that we don't allow ourselves that space for things to emerge. And no meditation can provide that stillness, that spaciousness, that quietness where stuff can. We can achieve an inner silence or an outer silence that allows more to emerge. We can also be very busy in our meditation sometimes. Still be in doing mode even in our meditations, which I think is why we've been encouraging quite a lot of just sitting in this meditation, in this on this retreat. So what I'm going to encourage you to, or invite you, is to have 15 minutes. You may want to have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. Just do whatever you need to do. But again, can you just have your drink or just do whatever you're going to do without getting into being task orientated? No. And in terms of creating reflective space, actually sitting down with a cup of tea can be a great reflective space, you know. If you're not talking to each other and you're not sort of on your laptop or whatever else it is at the same time, but if you're just sitting there with your cup of tea, experiencing what it tastes like, the heat, the feeling of it, and just being with it, or just being with yourself as you have your tea, you might find things emerging. So, if you can come back for 11:45, and if you want, you can just be sitting with other people having a cup of tea, or you can do it somewhere else, have your screen off. Just do whatever feels right for you. Hello, so welcome back. And I guess I was feeling it's just nice to create a bit of space where things can emerge and we can reflect. And I'm thinking about what creates those spaces for me. So yes, can be having a cup of tea, can be sitting quietly inside or outside, but also actually sometimes when I'm moving my body, I find that I'm much more reflective. So like if I'm doing walking meditation or if I'm swimming, there's something about the activity and just letting your body get on with it, and then your mind can go free. So what I'm going to invite us to do, if it feels appropriate, is to do some walking meditation. So I know everybody's in different spaces, but probably you can find at least a line that you can walk along and back, you know. Or maybe you've got more space in your room when you might be able to go in a circle. But I just invite you to find a way of doing a bit of walking, maybe just for 10 minutes. Not trying to do anything other than just be walking. Yeah, not trying to be mindful, not trying to walk really, really slowly, but just whatever pace feels natural, but just back and forth or around, and just see if anything emerges, and if it doesn't, that's fine. So I'll ring a bell to, probably it'd be nice to stand first, yeah? Let's do a bit of standing. You know, Buddha said practicing mindfulness, sitting, standing, walking, lying down. So let's do a bit of standing. And then when I ring the bell, that'll be a single to do a bit of walking. When I ring the bell again, that'll be another signal to stop and stand. And then another ring bell, and that'll be to come back to sitting. And I'll remind ourselves of that, but I'm not going to lead this. So just see what it's like. So, standing. You're just standing for about 3 minutes. So, moving on to some walking. Or if it feels better for you to just continue standing or to do some sitting. I'll be walking for about 10 minutes. So if we've been moving, just being still once more. Noticing what it's like to stop. And if you're not already sitting, just going back into a sitting position. And we'll do a little bit of just turning towards our experience, and at a certain point I'll just drop in a couple of questions and maybe have that idea of, rather than thinking about them or necessarily needing to answer them, just maybe like a pebble being dropped in a lake, see if there are any ripples. Anything that responds, and if not, that's fine. So settling into your meditation posture, whatever that may be. Just allowing yourself to connect with your experience, whatever that might be. You feel connected with your body, a particular part of your body right now. Can you have a sense of the whole body? Head down to your feet, your toes, leading the arms and the fingers and thumbs. Connection with your seat, with the ground below. Listening to your body. Trying to tell you anything. Just noticing how it is right now. How you are right now. Having that sense of yourself. As a living, breathing body, inhabiting the world alongside other living, breathing bodies. And bringing awareness to your breathing. So experiencing yourself as a breathing body. Experiencing the body, the whole body as you breathe in, and experiencing the body as you breathe out. Sensitive to sensations, movements in the body. You're never completely still. Subtle movements as we breathe, as we adjust our posture. But can you have that sense? Or stillness and movement together. And quietness. Stillness, spaciousness. Around and within. Even if there may be sounds around us. Mental chatter. Again, is there a way of also experiencing an inner silence or spaciousness that includes, contains whatever you're experiencing? Be aware of it, sit with it, just allowing yourself to be. Seeing what's there. Just bringing some mirror-like wisdom just to allow things to be without judging. Just bringing awareness. So aligning yourself with your reality. Knowing that your reality is part of that wider reality. This is how things are. Right now, your experience. That may include pleasant or unpleasant sensations in the body, emotions, thoughts, mental states. So just seeing what's there. Accepting, acknowledging what's there. Allowing yourself to be who you are, how you are. Knowing that's good enough. there anything that's been emerging in your awareness on the retreat? Especially something that feels alive, important to you. Anything you'd like to pay more attention to, give more space to, perhaps more time, more energy to in the coming year? Any conditions that would support that? And I think it might be helpful to let go of to create the space for something new to emerge. What we are today comes from our thoughts of yesterday, and our present thoughts build our life of tomorrow. Our life is the creation of our mind. So we're drawing to an end of this morning's session. I thought it might be nice just to end with a mantra. And since I've been going on about mirror-like wisdom, to do one of the Akshobhya ones, maybe the melodic one. So if you were there last night, you'll hopefully remember it, but you can just listen to it a few times and join in, or just choose to listen if you don't want to join in. But remembering that because we're on Zoom, no one can hear your chanting. So you can just go for it and do whatever you like, because it's more the feeling behind it than the actual, you know, we're not trying to be musicians and do it perfect. In fact, we don't want to do anything perfect, just being good enough, yeah. That was Winnicott, who was a paediatrician and a psychoanalyst who worked a lot with children and families and mothers. And I think one of the things that he coined, which was really helpful, was that idea of being just a good enough mother, you know, because there's all these views that you have to do everything right and be perfect. And I think that's the same for, you know, life. You know, we just need to be good enough. We don't have to be perfect. Anyone who saw Barbie, that was very much one of the messages that I think a lot of people resonated with, isn't it? There's all these things that we're supposed to do, or we feel we should do, and we can just be enough. Walk enough. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo Hum. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Om Vajrakshobhyo. Okay, so we'll end there. There'll be groups at 3:30 and a period of practice, or maybe some Q&A or both at 4. And then at 7 o'clock, Natadeva will be leading session 7 till 8:30. And then we have the extra late night session, as it's New Year's Eve, from 11 p.m. till 12:15, if you're able to stay up that late. Anyway, go well, and hope to see you later on.
Hi, Alice. Alice.